BSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired NATO veteran. He's a visiting professor of international security at Dickinson College, and he's here to help me understand NATO and how it works at Brussels. It is many states with many defense ministers. It is meeting face-to-face routinely. The communication system is always giving us new declarations. For example, right now, Prime Minister Trudeau is promising to support Ukraine with a Canadian warship departing for the Black Sea. We also have the notice that Ben Wallace, the Defense Secretary of the United Kingdom, has sent man pads to Ukraine. Others are making promises. And then there's this. Pressure mounts on Germany to drop a longstanding refusal to help the country defend itself in the event of a Russian attack. Jeff, is it necessary for NATO to move unanimously? Is there room for dissent? Can Germany not show up and NATO still be coherent?
Be very difficult, John, because one of the basic principles of NATO on big decisions is unanimity. And in the political realm, those decisions are made by the NATO Council of ambassadors and foreign ministers, if it's at a level in Brussels. On the military side, military activities are coordinated at NATO military headquarters in Mons outside of Brussels. Now, bilaterally, could the United States make a decision, as it has, to provide Ukraine with military assistance, javelins? Blinken announced $200 million and more military aid. Yes, that can be done. That doesn't require any kind of NATO agreement, though probably NATO notification. In like fashion, the Brits, we mentioned a few moments ago, could bilaterally decide to provide anti-tank weapons to the Ukraine. But for major a response, one of the strongest things the West has going for it is NATO's ability to speak with one voice. But that's very difficult as this alliance has gotten larger. We've now moved to 30 voices, and keeping everybody aligned and keeping everybody together to demonstrate to Mr. Putin, not only will there be a prompt response, this will be a lot more painful than you can possibly imagine, is critically important. At the end of the day, you know, John, Michael Howard once said that NATO operates with two things in mind when it comes to the United States as the leader of the alliance. First, the United States and NATO together demonstrating the military capability that hopefully will deter the outbreak of war. We're working on that right now. The second is the United States reassuring its allies that of its intention, that it really is concerned about their security policy as well. So deterrence for the adversary, reassurance for the allies is critical for NATO success in past and now in future.
This is the Russian borderland. These are the buffer states. Ukraine is probably the major one, but there are others. Kazakhstan has been in the news. The Baltic states, Jeff, you've toured the Baltic states. I've only ever read about them. I hope to be there someday. I know the reporting I've done this last, at least since summer, they are extremely alarmed, extremely vulnerable, and are not at all confident that they can be supported if Ukraine collapses. Do you believe that Ukraine would not be the last, as some of the Baltic voices speak?
Absolutely do not think there'll be a last. The Russians for years have talked about the so-called near abroad. What is that? You've kind of introduced this, John. These are large Russian populations living in those countries that were formerly part of the Soviet Union. So in the Ukraine, for example, in eastern Ukraine, about 20% or less, about 8 million people out of the 40 or 50 million people in the Ukraine call themselves Russian. Most of them live in the very eastern part of the country or in Crimea. In similar fashion, if you go to Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, they all have large Russian populations. So might the Russians try to use what they would argue as mistreatment of those minorities in those countries as a pretext for them to intervene? They certainly might well do that. And many of them, I think, took some solace, they, the Russians, from the comments by Mr. Trump when he was president, that the United States might not come to the aid, particularly of those countries that were exposed and actually stay consistent with Article 5 of the NATO treaty. That's really what this is all about. And also, this is part and parcel of a larger strategy by Putin, which is to totally undermine NATO and the United States. If he can demonstrate the United States does not stand behind its commitments, that reassurance piece again, then it's really a death knell for NATO.
So that Moscow has two missions, not just one. One is to secure the near abroad. The other is to fragment NATO. And right now, it's following those courses.
And those two are inextricably, in my mind, those two are inextricably linked. And I keep coming back to that comment Mr. Putin made back in 2004, that the end of the Soviet Union was the greatest catastrophe of the 20th century in his eyes. He firmly believes that. If he believes that, the strategy to counteract that is one to reassert at least political control of those areas, the Soviet Union, the near abroad, and undermine what he thought was the greatest threat to the Soviet Union, which brought about its demise, which was the United States and the Western alliance.
What we know now is the Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, is headed to Geneva for conversations with the Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, in these next hours. After that, unknown. The fog of war descends. Jeff McCausland, Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army, retired, CBS News, visiting professor of international security at Dickinson College. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.